Hey, Jeff here. If you like the podcast, you might dig this. Dan Hodgins is going to join Lisa Murphy and I for 3 gigs in 2018. We're going to be in Portland, Oregon, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Madison, Wisconsin. We're calling it the Talking Play Tour because that's what we're going to be doing, talk and play. You can learn more at playvolutionhq.com/events. Hope to see you there.
All right. Welcome back to the Child Care Barn Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from deckside. Actually, we're on the deck. We're pond side here at Explorations Early Learning Intergalactic Headquarters. On deck with me is Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
Tasha Johnson.
Aloha.
And hey, we're starting a new series now. We did way back when. I'll look up when Lisa starts talking in a minute. I'll look back at the episode numbers and get back at you. We did a series on defining play. Now we're going to look at play types. So this is you read it in the episode name. This is part one. Play types part one is what we're talking about. So Lisa, bring us into this topic.
The play types were developed by Bob Hughes for the purposes of adults who study and facilitate play. They do talk about the book that he wrote where they go into more depth, but I did find some nice brief definitions online. The book that he wrote in 1996 for you nerds out there is called A Play Worker's Taxonomy of Play Types, and it was published by Playlink in the UK. So goes on to say children's play is, of course, rich and varied and organic and constantly evolving. It can explore different types at the same time, flow from one to another and back again. And as such, the definitions that we're about to unpack are by adults for adults. They're useful in helping adults be more specific when we're talking about children's play, but will only ever capture a narrow aspect of the wealth and the depth that comes with children's play. They also say that the list of play types is evolving and should never, ever be assumed to be complete.
If you want to go back, it's episode 312 through 319 where we talked about definitions of play. That was using a definition that Peter Gray came up with. So those are some good episodes that might be some valuable context for you when we dig into this stuff. So where we want to where
16 we, play types
16
currently.
Play types. And so we may end up with 16 episodes here. We may not. We're just going to go through them and talk about what we want to talk about on each one of the types, and we'll see where it goes from there.
Yes, I like the reminder that this is so adults can speak to each other about what they see unfolding. You know what I'm saying? Like, my sense from that was that they're not telling you to sit down and plan for
these types of play.
Okay. But mm-hmm. one of the, and I don't know when it'll come up, so I'll say it now, but maybe end up saying it again, is that I think if you videoed an all day in a classroom, I think as adults you could sit back and say, oh, well, this is when it looked like this play or this is when it looked like that play. But there's also room for multiple kinds of play to be happening at the same time. Yes.
And so this isn't something like, hey, Johnny, why don't you go over there and do some social emotional play?
Yeah, exactly. So we'll start at the top.
All right.
Number one, symbolic play. And the definition provided is that it is play which allows control, gradual exploration, and increased understanding without the risk of being out of depth.
What?
For example, using a piece of string to symbolize a wedding ring, using a piece of wood to symbolize a person or an object. When something gets to stand for something else was how I read that, and I was like, huh? And I wrote something standing for something else.
That's a little bit more user-friendly definition.
Well, and I actually did that through the whole thing, uh-huh. Made it a little more user-friendly.
And so from reading Ellison Gopnik, we know from her research that symbolic play starts at the age of one or younger, mm-hmm. which is something we didn't used to, I mean, we didn't used to understand. And this is, you know, baby, my grandbaby Riker is just about eight months old.
Almost eight months old.
And there's, it's not long. He's going to be standing up and walking and then picking up blocks and holding them up to, probably not holding them up to his ear. Nobody in the house uses their phone as a phone. He's going to be holding blocks and
scrolling.
And swiping and scrolling.
holding it up and taking a selfie.
Yeah, exactly.
Take my picture. That's true. You know, that's interesting. That would be a neat observation. How often do you ever actually see kids do, I mean, back in the day.
Yeah.
You always saw blocks with their heads tilted.
They're walking and holding it like that. Huh. And so what do we want to know about symbolic play?
Well, it's important for stuff to be able to start to stand for something else. We know that that's a precursor for, you know, writing. If the blocks are migrating into the dress-up center to turn into this is the pizza that I'm serving for lunch, that's like the beginning stages of the block can be a pizza.
And that squiggle can be a letter A.
And the squiggle can be a letter, exactly.
Yeah.
So, and that's why, you know, Lisa Murphy's bias, and I think Jeff and Tasha mm-hmm. share it with me, of stuff being able to migrate throughout the playroom and the classroom is really important. Because if everything has to stay in the center, you essentially deprive children of the opportunity of
exactly.
having something stand for something
yeah.
else.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, symbolic play when you're 14 months old, when this is just getting started, this is the beginning of learning calculus. Mm. I mean, x equals mm-hmm. block equals oh, block ooh. Equals phone is x equals 3.15. What I mean, it's
that's
the beginning of all that. So it's not just the literacy, but it's understanding of mathematics as well.
So you can now post a sign in your infant room saying
we're learning
doing calculus.
It's pre-calc. It's pre-calc.
Pre-calc. Yeah. So. Symbolic play.
Would you think this is easy for observers to notice? Like symbolic play, would you say is pretty self? Like you could identify that kind of play unfolding pretty easily.
I think so. Yes.
Would think and hope so, but the reality of I've come in contact with people who. I would believe might struggle with this, that are working on a daily basis with young children.
Struggle with seeing it or struggle with realizing that it's important?
Yes.
And this just jumped in my head. I would probably argue that even if you had rules that things aren't allowed to do go around the room, children will still find a way to have this kind of play happen.
Oh, yeah, because this kind of, I mean, this is an innate drive. This is a symbolic play, symbolism, being able to substitute one thing for another thing. It's kind of a pretty innate human kind of thing. We're just kind of drawn to it. And so one of the ways we support this isn't to sit down in circle time and discuss, well, today, boys and girls, it's time to learn about symbolic play. No, it just kind of happens.
Well, now, can we interrupt symbolic play sometimes too by they're taking the blocks and using them as pizza or something and we think, oh, I shall go get some play pizza.
Here's the plastic pizza.
In our effort to appear as though we're
facilitating or helping it along,
we might actually be depriving them of the opportunity.
As I reread the definition...
Play which allows control, gradual exploration, and increased understanding without the risk of being out of one's depth.
So
I'm increasing my understanding about my world, but mm-hmm. in a way that is...
Within my comfort zone.
Yes, and I feel safe and can explore.
And so within the definition, it's stating that we can't push kids into this because they've got to be in their...
Well, if you think about it, so my brain is thinking of Vygotsky and the circle and ZPD, right? So mm-hmm. here's what I can do by myself. Here's what I can do with assistance, right? That ZPD. This is almost in that inner circle of what the child is able to do by themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when it comes to supporting this kind of play And I think when I think each one of these we go through, we got to talk about how do we support this. And I think we're going to come back to a lot of the same things. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be it's going to sound repetitive here, but after episode 14, but this is episode 1, so we'll spend some time on it. One of the things we need to do to support symbolic play is probably lots of different stuffs,
loose parts.
Yes. Loose yes. parts is the pop stuffs.
Things
isn't
probably that, good. Well, things that can actually stand for something
stand
else.
Stand for other things. Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you've got just room full of the plastic imitation pizza, where's my interest? Where's the prompt, so to speak, the invitation to have it be more than
where's,
just a
where's
pizza?
Where's the pizza? Necessity for me to
a box of loose parts can be thousands of things. A slice of plastic pizza
and
is really
one
just going to be a
And
slice
so in setting
pizza.
Up a space, we want to opt for... I don't know if generic's the right word, but basic things like blocks instead of the plastic pizza and the plastic oranges.
Open-ended materials. Yes.
Well, I'm even thinking, I mean, for costume-wise, if they want to dress up, just having hunks of material that they can clip together or tape together.
Instead of, like, the
costumes. The costumes. The pre-made
ones. Well,
ones.
I mean... Having hunks of fabric those can be used in more ways than the capes. Even if you kept the capes off to the right size,
well, capes could be used as hunks of material, but you don't want them.
Yeah, but I mean,
yeah, I got
just
you.
The,
sorry,
just the raw hunks of fabric allow them to be capes or baby blankets. When a cape is
table
pretty much
cloth,
a cape is pretty much a cape, but a
yes.
hunk of fabric is all those
is
things.
99
so.
Things.
So the And so when we're
and the migration becoming
yeah,
more
yeah,
flexible.
Yeah, migration needs flexible. To be a hunk of it. We got to let the stuff move around. Another
and I think that mindset, and we have said this before, is that just because you don't see it, you don't see it, like you, your brain's like, what's going on? Mm-hmm.
See what? See the
like if your adult brain is like, what are you doing?
What the fuck?
Yeah. Just because you don't get it doesn't mean it's not worth doing.
Yeah, if you don't see any relevance in it, doesn't mean it's not relevant.
It's almost like watching a TV show and going, wait, let me finish watching it to see how it...
Before I jump to conclusions.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they're doing it, it's relevant
to them.
Them.
Just, yes, exactly. Yes.
And so... did we touch on time? Time needs to be another one there
time's
too.
Time's
going to
be a given.
Yeah, time's
going to
be a one.
This.
Yeah, but I mean, we need
because the child would need the opportunity to start to see the connections by his or her own self,
or to be engaged in something that necessitates it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so if we're busy at teacher led, adult led activities all the time, the opportunities to fall into symbolic play
is not going to happen.
It doesn't happen
because this is what we're doing right now.
And so not only do we need time where the kids are the boss, where they're the leaders of the play.
I think adults intentionally posing questions that they honestly don't know the answer to, like if you know, I'm wondering, oh, we're out of like if you're like saying, you know, we don't have that today. I'm wondering what else we might be able to use in order to get what you're needing.
Yeah. I need a sandwich.
You're needing a sandwich.
And then somebody shows up with three flat blocks, two pieces of bread and a piece of cheese, and they make me a sandwich.
There you go.
I mean, so that kind of stuff, we can kind of prompt that kind of play if we want to. But for most kids, most of the time, we as the adults don't need to put ourselves...
You don't need to set this up. You don't need to be planning for symbolic play.
Yeah. We need to see it when it's happening.
Your environment, when it's being done... I was going to say right, effectively. There you go. This is going to happen on its own.
Yeah. Yeah, I think. What else do we need to know about symbolic play?
I think that's a good initial jump
in. What kind of symbolic play did you enjoy, do take part in? Do you remember anything when you were a kid?
Do I remember anything?
Anything.
Of symbolic play,
yeah.
Having something be something else? Mm. Oh, okay. So we had Tinker Toys, and I used to smoke the little yellow, the connector.
Yeah.
I mean, totally cigarettes. Those colored play school, remember SKOOL? Mm-hmm. Those blocks, the red ones and the blue ones.
Yeah.
I figured out that if you got the block, the blue square block wet, it would stick to the bottom of your foot, and I would wear them as high heels.
So you were licking them and then sticking them?
Licking
them
and sticking them on my
heel. Lick them and stick them.
Lick them and stick them.
Yeah, little kitten heels.
I used to cut out paper into triangles and tape them. That's not really maybe more symbolic because, but I'd make fake nails. I would always walk around the house with
fake nails and heels.
And heels and a cigarette. My mother probably was like, oh my God, we're doomed. We're doomed.
PJ is right. You are fancy. My symbolic play, a lot
of sandbox play.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it revolved around sticks and weapons.
Sure.
And I mean that. I mean, it was always swords and guns and knives and that kind of stuff. A lot of it. I remember playing with my. I had my little Ertl tractors. I think it was the toy metal tractors and farm equipment and all that kind of stuff. And so after the lawn got mowed, there'd be all the grass clippings and we collect those, and that would be hay or feed for the dinosaurs and cattle we had and that kind of stuff. And had dinosaurs living on the farm.
It sure.
Was, yeah, it was why not?
Progressive. Progressive farm. And so that kind of stuff. And so we don't have to set the stage. If we set the stage for this kind of play, we don't have to do much more than let it unfold. Stuff and time.
There you go. Stuff and time.
And so observation has been something people have asked us to talk more about. What does it come? I mean, do we need any special tips or touches for observing this kind of stuff, other than
I don't know if it's observation in the way
but
that
being
we
able to maybe being able to
notice
be
it.
Able to notice it and recognize it, and I mean name it, because I mean it's a step to other stuff.
What is knowing what these play types are?
The kids engaging in this kind of play is developmentally a step for the other stuff, and so it's good for us to be able to identify it.
And to see the relevance of it.
Yeah.
That it's not that they're trying to make clean up a pain in the butt by moving the pegs and the beads from one area to the other area. It's that they need these tools in order to keep the drama, the narrative, as you've been saying lately, to keep that moving ahead.
Yeah, yeah.
I need this to stand for this.
And so we have to be able to see that value when they're filling the bucket with blocks and walking across the room and abandoning it so that you have to put it away later in the day or it just gets left there. There's value in that because that bucket is probably symbolizing something for them. If not anything particular, it's symbolizing I can carry this heavy thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's for them in that moment, those toddlers and younger priests, that's all it needs to be. So sometimes, even if we don't understand what's going on, being able to identify it as something that's going on. I mean, we don't have to dig in and have them come over and dictate a story to us about the thing that they're doing.
We just need to
be able to see that it's
to me
it's
this
happening.
Is like the previous episode where we were talking about how I said I don't need you to link everything to the learning objective words. I want to know that you can if the situation calls for it. To me, I see the knowledge of these 16 play types kind of the same. That, you know, if you were really in a conversation with somebody who needed to know that you are aware of this, or if you needed to now point out the value of this to somebody, this is just going to give you that much more knowledge and to keep that conversation moving ahead.
Yeah, you can be the drinking fountain. You can spurt it out when you need to, but you don't have to be walking around the classroom going,
barfing.
Symbolic play, symbolic play, symbolic play, symbolic play, like a fountain.
Well, you might do that initially if this is new knowledge, right? How we do that. We go like, whoa. And then we see it all the time.
Yeah, just for your own understanding.
Yeah, but then you got to recalibrate.
And because you'll start wondering why the kids are staring at you. Why?
Just got that tick again.
Miss Lisa, you've shouted symbolic play 43 times in the last 15 minutes.
I just learned about it. I see it everywhere.
I was trying to observe the kids, but you were kind of pulling attention, and I'm wondering how long is that going to go on?
Until I learn about the second kind of play type.
Well, let's tease that one. What's the second kind?
Rough and tumble play.
Oh, boy. Well, we're going to get into that in the next episode. Anything else we want to throw on this one to draw it to a close? Mention the dude who came up with this.
Bob Hughes.
Mm-hmm.
And they were developed and elaborated in 1996 in his book, A Playworker's Taxonomy of Play Types.
Sounds riveting.
I would read it.
Of course you would.
I'd write a book report on it for everybody after I read it, too.
I'd just have Lisa Murphy read it and then podcast with her about it. Because that's how I do. Hey, this has been the Child Care Bar and Grill. We like you to think of this podcast as a symbol
of our love.
I was going to say
Oh,
that.
I'm sorry.
Oh, man. I was going to say.
You don't have feelings.
I said this podcast isn't our love. It's a symbol of our love. I'm not throwing any actual love out there, but.
And there's love for you, and I got love for you.
There's
love for everybody.
Symbolically.
Symbolically.
I mean, here's
we
some
love you all.
Hey, listeners, we'd like to throw you some symbolic love. No, we appreciate you.
And
it really does mean a lot that you listen to the show and you talk to us at gigs and that kind of stuff. Because, you know, we're just sitting here having fun doing this and then having other people enjoy it means a lot. If you want to non-symbolically but literally support the show, go to PlayvolutionHQ.com. com/support. Click there, grab the Amazon link, or pick one of the other ways you can support the show. You can support the show just by sharing it with a friend. You don't have to do anything fancy. Thanks for listening. Back with more soon. Bye-bye.
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 And scene. This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.
Oh. Hey, we need your support to keep the podcasts flowing. Go to explorationsearlylearning.com/support to learn how. One of the big things you can do is shop Amazon with the link we provide. You buy your cat food, you buy your kids' books, you buy whatever it is you buy on Amazon, you pay the regular price. We get a small percentage of it. Everybody wins. A lot of people are doing it. It really supports the shows, and we really appreciate it. Give it a try. Thanks.